This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for reaching out, too, with your responses and contributions to this new national conversation following the Sandy Hook school tragedy.
This is Oscar in Miami. I think it's high time that we stop the delusion that we're going to make this law or that law that's going to make these types of atrocities a thing of the past. I truly believe that if more people had training and background checks to carry concealed weapons, that the likelihood of stopping one of these terrible acts would much go up and the damages would much be less.
This is Kelsey Gerner in Miami, Florida. I'm wondering why more people aren't talking about the fact that the shooters for all of these school shootings are young white males. There's a crisis in masculinity in America where we are pushing males to be more violent and to act out more violently. That needs to be part of this discussion as well.
We also learned today that the vice president will be heading up an effort to control gun violence. The NRA, silent on the matter so far, will hold a news conference with promised specific proposals on Friday. And among the people reacting to the events of last Friday, author, novelist Rick Moody, author of The Ice Storm, about the quiet agony of growing up in suburban Connecticut. Moody, in thinking about his own life, found himself wondering about the eerily similar details of the life of Newtown shooter Adam Lanza. An excerpt now from a candid discussion with author Rick Moody.
My first response to the story, as with just about everybody else, is to feel like a parent, which I am. And that's almost too painful to try to articulate in words, especially this soon after something like that has happened. But that said, it is worth also considering who it is who does stuff like this and how he gets into the circumstance in which he does this kind of thing. And to just only think about it as, you know, the quintessence of evil and not bother to try to think about the emotional circumstances seems to me to be a failure of the will and a failure of the ability that's incumbent upon all of us to try to figure out how human beings are, how they tick, across the whole spectrum of behavior. He's another person, just like everybody else in the story, and what he did is monstrous and horrifying, but it's part of the family of possibilities of human psychology, and so we should try to figure it out and learn more about it and understand it in some ways, even as we revile it and hate it.
You may recall the Andrea Yates tragedy where a mom drowned her five kids in a tub and, you know, went through the court system. It was, you know, one of those things that obsessed America for a while. And I remember speaking to my mother about it one time, and she had five kids. I'm the oldest of the five. And in the course of just a completely informal conversation, she sort of said, boy, I can kind of feel for where that mom was. And my blood drained from my head. I could not understand what she was saying. I said, what? And there was this quality or this ability to not be sympathetic, but to sort of understand the pathway to a monstrous act like this that came out of her, you know, anxiety of being a mom and all that. And you, in a similar way, write about family troubles and alcoholism and the difficulty of the suburbs and lots of free time and, you know, sitting by yourself. And it's really chilling to see you kind of creep up to the edge of this path of circumstances that leads to an act like this. Did you feel personally some kind of, but for the grace of God, go I kind of idea?
I was an incredibly troubled kid in Connecticut who went through a lot of bad stuff in his 20s. And I often felt when I was younger, I mean, I'm 51 now, I don't feel this way any longer. But I felt when I was younger, great affiliation with all the troubled kids of Connecticut. You know, when I went into a high school, I looked for the kids wearing black with the, you know, tongue piercings and too many tattoos. And I felt like those people were my kin. In some cases, I felt like they were my kin as much as my parents were my kin, you know. So the fact of the matter is, what Adam Lanza did is one of the worst things anyone's ever done that I know of, and I don't dispute that. But I do think that there are a lot of other sort of borderline kids trying to get through their lives in Connecticut today, in New England today, in the United States today, who could use a little sympathy and support. And that might be the thing that keeps them from doing something they regret, whether it's hurting someone else or hurting themselves. You know, I go to that place, and it doesn't mean that I don't go to the place of intense sympathy for these parents, because I do. I've been weeping about the story every day since Friday. You know, it's that painful. But I also feel the horror of sort of disaffiliation and lostness that a lot of these troubled young people feel. And I do feel, if you look at how mental health has been, how the industry has been practiced in America in the last 50 years, as you know, we used to round them all up, and then we determined that we couldn't afford that, and so we deinstitutionalized all of them. There are real costs to that decision to deinstitutionalize all of them. I don't think it makes sense to round them all up and deprive them all of liberty, but I don't think it makes sense to deinstitutionalize all of them either, because there are some people who just need that support. I needed that support for 29 days in 1987. I was in there, and the door locked behind me, and it was the smartest thing I ever did in my life.
Well, the mental health professionals stress over and over again that the violence is not necessarily a consequence of mental illness. It is more likely to be a consequence of mental illness ignored or some sort of cry for help consistently ignored or rebuffed in some way. And you really nail this kind of lives of quiet desperation piece for adolescents. And what did you have? What was the doorway for you that got you out of this? Not to say that you were ever close to anything like what Adam Lanza did, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of treatment. I'm lucky. I'm a Connecticut upper middle class kid who's really lucky because there was money, there was resources, there were avenues to try aggressively to help me out of my predicament in my 20s, and it worked. And I owe a lot of people a lot for that. I owe my parents a lot. I owe the job that I had at the time that was willing to, you know, write the insurance check that they needed to write to cover treatment for me and so on. You know, a lot of people worked on trying to make Rick Moody a fully functioning adult, and they were effective at it. And I'm happy to try to pay forward some of that and to try to be a voice of reason for other people who could use the same thing.
Finally, before we go, and I don't want to sound like some tabloid TV journalist, but as you note in your piece, there were guns around when you were in your most troubled period.
Yes, there were guns. No automatic weapons, I should say, John, because they didn't really, that wasn't, you know, what hunters did in those days. But there were guns, without a doubt. But that said, gun control is great, and I'm all for gun control, but I also think that this notion of trying to intervene and caring and loving and, you know, using all the resources that our incredibly affluent nation has at its disposal really could make a real difference.
Rick Moody, thanks so much, and have a great holiday season. We'll talk with you in the new year at some point.
All right, John. Thanks so much. I love your show. It's a pleasure.
As author Rick Moody says there, guns were around as he was growing up in Connecticut. In his case, did not figure in his experience described so candidly there. But what of the military-style weapons in this case in Connecticut?
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.